Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner arrive in China this morning. It's an annual meeting between the world's two largest economies, but not likely to be business as usual this time around. And that's because of the dramatic story of activist Chen Guangcheng. Chen is believed to be hiding under American protection in Beijing, maybe even in the U.S. embassy. That's after he escaped house arrest last week. U.S. officials have kept an unusually solid wall of secrecy about Chen, refusing even to say his name. Here's John Brennan carefully choosing his words while he's speaking on Fox.
China-U.S. relations is very important, so we're going to make sure that we do this in the appropriate way and that the appropriate balance is struck.
Probably easier said than done. Joining us now, David Sanger, chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. And David, I wondered if you can kind of walk us through this appropriate balance that John Brennan is talking about. Maybe you can kind of give us a rundown on exactly the number of things the U.S. is trying to keep in the balance here.
Well, there's a whole lot. And the first, of course, is that the negotiations, the talks that are about to start on Thursday, which are called the U.S.-China Strategic and Economic Dialogue, is part of an effort to get China into regular, normal conversations on the toughest issues between the two countries. And so obviously there's a range of trade, economic, currency issues, but there's also question of China's military buildup, of cyber warfare, which was a big issue in the last strategic and economic dialogue. There's a question of trying to curb China's appetite for Iran's oil so that the sanctions have some true effect. There's North Korea. So there's an endless group of major issues that the U.S. believes can only make progress on if China is cooperative. So in the midst of this comes this remarkable case of Mr. Chen, a blind dissident who escaped from a house arrest that had never been formally imposed by any court, and makes his way, we believe, to the U.S. Embassy, a situation the U.S. and China have not been in since right after Tiananmen Square in 1989, when a very famous dissident took up residence for a year inside the embassy. And I was a correspondent in Asia at the time and remember having dinner one night one-on-one with the American ambassador to China, who at the time wouldn't even admit that the dissident was living in the basement underneath our feet. And that's sort of where they are right now. And they're there right now because they're afraid that the Chinese will lose face if the U.S., you know, it makes clear that, in fact, this dissident got out from underneath these guards, made his way to Beijing, got into the embassy.
But I'm glad you mentioned Tiananmen Square, David, because although there's some parallels to that, there's a big difference here, and that is that reportedly Chen Guangcheng does not want to go into exile. He wants to stay in China. How does that complicate it?
Well, it makes it very hard because the issue in this case is that the Chinese would basically have to guarantee that he could continue living a normal life, especially since he hasn't been charged with anything in recent times. He had been in jail earlier on what I think most Americans would view as pretty trumped-up charges. But Cheng's view is that if he goes to the United States, he loses the most important audience that he wants to address, which is the Chinese people. And so he not only wants to stay, but he wants to stay as a thorn in the side of the Chinese leadership. And remember, we're so obsessed right now thinking about our own presidential election that many Americans don't stop to think that this is happening in the midst of the biggest power change in China in a decade. You're about to go see about 70% of the Chinese leadership turn over in the next year. And so it's an extraordinarily delicate time where there's a huge amount of jockeying for position and nobody in the Chinese leadership wanting to appear weak.
And it's also happening at a time where we've got this scandal over Bo Xilai and the murdered British man. And as you say, Chen's house arrest was not legal, and it appears that all he's really succeeded in doing is embarrassing the authorities there. Does this, in the eyes of the Chinese people, kind of weaken their own government?
Well, their own government has looked a bit weak. The news about Chen has been heavily censored in China, though obviously it'll get out, and the Chinese are pretty savvy about getting around official internet censorship. But you make a good point, because this is happening in the context of the big scandal about Mr. Bo, who was an aspirant for one of those top leadership positions in China. His wife has now been arrested in under suspicion of murdering a British businessman who was also involved in many business deals with her. He has been denounced as corrupt. So you have seen the leadership in the midst of trying to contain one scandal when all of the rest of this is unfolding. And it certainly makes this the messiest Chinese leadership change that we've seen in modern times, certainly since China became a major power.
But does that give an opportunity to the United States? Is this a point in which negotiations with China might actually be a little bit easier?
You know, I don't think so, Celeste. I think it's going to make it much harder. As one discovers when you're negotiating with North Korea over its nuclear program or with Iran over its nuclear program, the hardest negotiations to conduct are when the government on the other side is divided, because nobody wants to reach out and make concessions that make themselves look weak at a moment that they're also jockeying for position internally. And so I think this is going to be a very tough one. And as you said before, if Mr. Wang was interested in coming to the United States, then you might be able to do what they did in 1989 and negotiate like a medical leave. And that's what happened with Fang Lijie, who came to the United States and ultimately passed away here a few months ago. But that's not the situation that the outcome that's being sought here.
David Sanger is chief Washington correspondent for our partner, The New York Times. You can hear his weekly The Washington Report. Just visit our website at thetakeaway.org. David, thank you so much.
Thank you.